Is high voltage syndrome real? Consider the case of Angelique Cotin, a French peasant girl who had a bizarre effect on objects and people. Angelique became known as the Electric Girl. It was one of the first of its kind to be scientifically investigated. The phenomena began in the small town in France back in 1846 when Angelique was 14 with some other girls. They were weaving silk gloves on an oak frame when suddenly the frame began to shake as if it were alive. When she attempted to sit in a chair, it was pulled or pushed away. Such was the power of the force that a strong man couldn't hold down the chair. Whenever she went near objects, they moved away from her, even without apparent physical contact. The merest touch of her hand, apron, or petticoats sent things, even heavy furniture, flying off or bouncing up and down, even if someone was firmly holding them down. People who were near her, even without any contact, would frequently get electric shocks. A study group was appointed by the French Academy of Sciences, and a well-known physicist of the day, François Arago, published a report in the journal Des Debats in February of 1846. There is a lengthy translation of this report entitled The Electric Girl, published by Popular Science Monthly, Volume 6, in March of 1875. The episode lasted 10 weeks before the strange manifestations finally ceased. Electric people, sliders, high voltage individuals. We'll explore when Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. C.J. Romer has been studying the paranormal since the 1980s. He's worked on 13 different televised series, from Ghost Hunters to Most Haunted. He's also a member of ASSAP, the Association for the Scientific Study of Anomalous Phenomena. C.J. Romer, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Hi, good morning. I'm fine. It's very early here, but I suppose it's still late evening for you.
Well, technically, it's very early, too. It's about 2 o'clock in the morning Eastern time.
I'm over in the UK, so we're well into the next day here. So it's a new dawn.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Just let's, before we sort of dive into sliders and electric people, just tell us a little bit about ASSAP, what you do at the Association for the Scientific Study of Anomalous Phenomena.
Okay. ASSAP is what we normally call it, or ASAP. You can call it either. In fact, we really don't mind how anyone says it. It was set up in 1981 as an offshoot of the Society for Psychical Research, which was founded back in 1882. So 100 years before, a group of Victorian intellectuals had decided that they needed to study ghosts, the supernatural, those weird edge phenomena that most scientists wouldn't look at. And they set up a series of committees, and for 100 years they published reports and did valuable work. And then in 1981, a group of younger, enthusiastic people said, but there's a whole load of cases that you're not looking at and you're not taking seriously. So they split off and they formed ASSAP, and it's a more Fortean group. So from UFOs to electric people to whether parrots can change television's channels, you name it, we've looked at it over the years, and we're not prescriptive at all. We're open-minded scientists looking for a solution, really, to some of life's little mysteries. Is that fair?
Absolutely, absolutely. You've come to the right place. Let's put it that way. I mentioned the case of Angelique Cotin. Are you familiar with Angelique's case?
I am, mainly through, as you say, the Popular Mechanics article, which if you Google, you can find it online. It'll come up. It's Angelique Cotin, C-O-T-T-I-N, is the way to look, or just Electric Girl. And unfortunately, I mean, the problem with it was that it lasted 10 weeks. And at the end of it, she was taken in front of a French commission of distinguished scientists who were fairly sniffy about the whole thing and obviously didn't believe in it, despite the fact that she'd had two expert witnesses, shall we call them, a physicist and a doctor, already write reports. And as soon as they pulled her in front of the commission, what happened? It stopped working. And, you know, that was why, from that point onwards, the whole case fell into disrepute, because otherwise I think the science as we know it would have been very different.
Well, do you think it was a hoax, or do you think perhaps it just it was spontaneous and it just ended just as
I think it's
almost like when you take a car into the mechanic and it stops making that rumbling sound as soon as you never fails, right? As soon as you take it to the garage.
Exactly. It happened to me a couple of weeks ago, actually. We had a funny noise, took it to the garage, and it sounded like complete idiots when they couldn't find anything wrong with it. But, yeah, but in this case, yeah, it was exactly that. As soon as she was put under scrutiny, now, let's say there's two possibilities here. One is that the phenomena was, as you say, spontaneous, and it came to an end. The second possibility is that in some way it's tricky. It was deliberately avoiding being observed. Because after that, if we read the Popular Mechanics article, it goes on to say that she was presenting herself, she was demonstrating it in private homes. Now, the suggestion by the commission was that she was just doing it for the money. But I think in reality, you know, you're a 16-year-old girl. How old was she? 13-year-old girl, 14-year-old girl. I can't remember. She was a young woman. You're taken in front of a bunch of strong-minded scientists who don't believe what you've got to say. And then if she's actually causing the phenomena in some way, I'm not surprised it's not working, are you?
No, I mean, yeah, she would have been under some considerable stress. She would have been intimidated. But the idea that this slight girl, and that's the way she's been described in the articles I've read,
yep.
and she was 14, that she could move heavy objects much in the same way that a magnet, you know, the opposite poles are repelling. You know, in 1846, you know, how would she pull something like this off, assuming it was a hoax? The other thing that is interesting to me is this is really 1846, sort of the height of our experience with of people's experience with electricity. And it could well have been sort of perceived as some kind of poltergeist activity. So not something, some unexplained scientific phenomena, but paranormal.
Exactly that. And I mean, I think the thing is that if you look at how poltergeist cases have been viewed over the, this is my area really, studying poltergeist. But if you look at how we explain, each generation tends to explain things in terms of the latest cutting edge science they know. Nowadays, we spend a lot of time talking about quantum mechanics, and people are very fond of quantum mechanics as an explanation for almost anything. But if you go back through history, we always interpret phenomena in terms of, you know, what's important to us. Tell you one example, the idea that ghosts are recordings of past events rather than spirits of the dead, that ghosts are a recording, that really becomes popular in the 1970s when, if you were young enough to have, if you're old enough to have lived then, we all used to have tape recorders and tape songs off the radio
right.
In an illegal pirate kind of way. And once we were familiar with recording phenomena, we started to interpret ghosts as being stone tapes, as being recordings. So cultures always do that. But, yeah, I mean, Angelique Cotton, she was able to tell which end of a needle was which by touch. That was the interesting thing about her. It's not just a seeming. I mean, her dress reaches out like a magnet and touches things. And when it touches things, they're attracted to her or they're repelled. So the whole phenomena seemed to be magnetic in some way.
How common is this? I mean, are there lots of cases today that you're aware of, or is it exceedingly rare?
It is rare. It is exceedingly rare at the level of Angelique Cotton, where the poor girl's friends, there were 10 people in the room, I believe, and they all suddenly were distressed by what was happening around them. But the poltergeist phenomena has remained almost exactly the same for 500 years at least, and the SPR did some work. What they did was they took cases from different continents, from South America, from India, from Africa, and from, you know, the Americas. What they discovered was that when you break them down, they're pretty much the same in every culture, in every age. So it seems to be a phenomena which isn't fully understood by science, which has been occurring for many, many centuries and doesn't change in any way. So you know, the biggest problem we have is the prejudice we have against actually taking these things seriously. If we're more open-minded and more willing to talk to people and listen to what they have to say. I mean, I have strong opinions on a number of things, and I'm probably wrong about most of them. But that doesn't matter. The point is I'm willing to listen to what other people have to say.
Right, right. I mean, this was a dramatic case, the Angelique Cotton case, where, I mean, huge pieces of heavy furniture basically flying around the room. But then we have cases where people seem to store up, I don't know, a great deal of static electricity. I was reading about this case. There was a 12-year-old boy in Henbury, Bristol, He broke his arm. This was back in 1976. I don't know if you're familiar with this story.
Yep.
And then for 2 days after his injury, his hair stood straight up on his head, and he gave terrible electric shocks to anyone around him. Do you think that's related to the Angelique Cotin, or are they two different phenomena?
No, I think they're probably the same phenomena, because Angelique built up huge amounts of static electricity. And I mean, we can do that, but if you walk across the carpet in your socks, you can build up a static electric charge pretty much as effectively as a Van de Graaff generator. It's not going to do you any harm. Well, it might do. My wife, Beck, my other half, she got her PhD on ghosts, on studying Victorian and modern apparitions on Halloween 2013. So she has a PhD in spooks. I suppose you could call her a ghostbuster.
Brilliant.
Every time she goes out, it's a genuine British university degree, PhD. But every time she goes out and touches the car, she gets an electric shock off it. And quite often, if she touches anything electrical, it tends to go wrong. So I have no reason to doubt that people have very strong, you know, electrical static fields. And for some people, it's a real pain. They just can't touch the car without getting a shock. So you must have experienced that kind of thing, though. Have you ever got stressed or angry because you're trying to get something done? You've got a deadline and suddenly your computer stops working.
That has not happened to me. But what has happened to me, and I think this may have just been a quirky, random thing. I'm always looking for the prosaic explanation. But I remember maybe 25, 30 years ago, and I would cross over this pedestrian bridge on the way home every night, and it was lined with street lamps. And as I walked over, this happened on maybe a half a dozen occasions over a period of 2 years. As I walked across the footbridge, one particular street lamp would flicker, and then as soon as I crossed over, it would stop flickering. And it always, to me, it seemed to be the same street lamp, and it would happen at night, of course. That's when the lamps come on. And I guess I thought at the time, well, maybe I'm a slider, although I don't think I knew that name at the time.
No, I had an experience once walking down a country road with the lamps going out in front of me as I approached, and I was quite terrified because it was dark, it was night, and every time I approached a street light, it would go out. And I was more worried about being mugged than anything, I think, but which was ridiculous because the English countryside is not full of muggers, but there you go. But my father, every night when he walked the dog, the cat would follow after them. So the three of them would walk down our street outside my parents' house, and there was one particular street lamp, and as they approached it, it would go out. And when they came back, it would come back on again. So, being scientifically minded, I went outside and I danced around it and I ran up and down the street and the neighbours thought I was nuts, but I jumped up and down to see if there was a loose wire and I tried everything I could, but I couldn't make it happen. But so we then got my dad to walk up the road at different times of night and it still happened. And he used to joke that it was his street lamp and it talked to him. And this, you know, he was joking, but as he approached it, it would go off. And it was years later that I met Hilary Evans. He was one of the founders of ASAP. And as you say, he coined the term sliders, street lamp interference. And we ran the street light interference database exchange. Now, it's before I was still very young then. It was before I was a member of ASAP even. But nowadays, as the secretary, I've been going through those records, reading them, and trying to see how common this experience is. And I bet you that there are a couple of hundred people out there listening to this show who have experienced exactly this, that they have the same issue as they approach streetlights, they go out or dead streetlights come on, and yet they've never even thought about it as being anything unusual in any way.
And we're going to invite people to call in at the bottom of the next hour. If people believe that they are electric people or high voltage individuals or sliders, what's the preferred nomenclature these days? Is it high voltage people?
I would not know. I would say high voltage people sounds wonderful. I was reminded of a song by Electric Six, Danger, Danger, High Voltage. So let's go with high voltage people.
All right.
Scientists are far too keen to tell other people what their condition is called. Much better to let people choose themselves. So let's go
right
with that. Yeah.
Have there been any?
A
have there been any? Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
No. I just don't want to impose my ideas on you. If you have these experiences, tell me what's happening to you. Don't expect me to know, because I'm an idiot and I don't know. Yeah, it's that simple. That's how science works. It's a bunch of idiots asking questions.
That's right. We're all scrabbling around in the dark looking for answers here.
Exactly.
Have there been any studies to try and determine commonalities? Was, for example, this boy who broke his arm in Bristol, what did he have in common with an Angelique Cotin? Or there was a wonderful case, a Mrs. Jacqueline Priest in Manchester. Apparently, she produced something like on the order of 10 times the normal level of static electricity. She could transmit miniature bolts of lightning out of her fingers.
Yep. There's a British publication called The Fortean Times, which has been going since, I think, 1973. It was called The News back then. And they very carefully collected and recorded Bob Rickard and the rest of the gang of Fort, as we call them. They've collected these kind of experiences from all over the world. And yeah, I mean, the problem is that we tend to look at individual cases. So when it happens, scientists rush over, and you'd be surprised, actually. Even poltergeist cases have tended to attract top-level scientists. The Enfield poltergeist, do you know the case?
The Enfield poltergeist, I'm somewhat familiar with it, but give me a summary.
It was a poltergeist case in North London involving two girls. It's been accused of being fraudulent by some, and other people say it's the best evidence we have. And probably some of it's fraudulent and some of it wasn't. You know, who knows? But one of the things about Enfield is that the people who went there included Pye, P-Y-E, which was a Cambridge electronics group who produced very high-quality audio equipment. They sent a bunch of scientists down to take recordings. And the Max Planck laboratories over in Germany, who are, you know, probably at that time the greatest electronics research or physics research group in the world, they came over and took huge numbers of measurements. So scientists turn up and they look at these cases and they take lots of data, and then the data tends to sit forgotten and not be analyzed because everybody's got other work that pays to do. And the whole thing gets forgotten for another 50 years. And this was the case with the Bristol case, and this is the case with most of these cases. People turn up, collect data, write reports, and then they get shelved. So what we need to do is have enthusiastic people like yourself to look these cases up and look for the commonalities and find out a way to go forward. But unless we've got an electric person to work with, we're not going to get anywhere, are we?
No, and well, perhaps we'll get some tonight. And we can put them in touch with ASAP. And we'll do it ASAP. C.J. Romer, my guest. He's been studying the paranormal since the 1980s. And he is a member of the Association for the Scientific Study of Anomalous Phenomena. We'll talk about electric people when we come back. John Mellencamp, Cherry Bomb, taking us into the break on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Say hello on Twitter, at Richard Syrett, S-Y-R-E-T-T. I mentioned this boy from Henbury, Bristol, named Vivian Jones. Back in 1976, he broke his arm. For 2 days after his injury, his hair stood straight up on his head. He gave terrible electric shocks to anyone around him. The television and lights were also affected by his high voltage syndrome. They would flicker constantly until he left the room. Watches were also affected. And Vivian, get this, was able to hold a light bulb in his hand and it would immediately light up. But this phenomenon only lasted 2 days and has yet to be explained. Back to more of my conversation with C.J. Romer from ASAP as we continue to discuss high voltage individuals right here on Coast to Coast AM. We are back with C.J. Romer from ASAP, the Association for the Scientific Study of Anomalous Phenomena. We're talking about electric people or sliders or, if you wish, high-voltage individuals. Now, Einstein said that everything is vibration. Does that have something to do with this, do you suspect?
I would say that if you said that to a physicist, they would say, well, yeah, okay, but... So let's start with... Let's start with your street lamp that went out, yeah? Why do you think it happened as you approached it? It flickered, didn't it?
It did. It's possible. Again, always looking for the prosaic explanation. Perhaps the vibration of me on the pedestrian footbridge had some effect on the wiring of the street lamp.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's a good way to start. And maybe it does. Back in 1981, when Hilary Evans started researching, the first problem we found with ASAP was we knew nothing about how street lamps worked. And I don't know. Do you know how they work?
Do I know? No, not particularly.
Right. Well, the thing is that the problem is that there's many different types. So it all depends on how your particular street lamp works. But the majority of them work quite strangely, actually. They have, up in the glass thing, there's a pool of liquid metal, and there's a filament that heats up, and the metal, as it heats up, is converted into a gas, often sodium. And as the filament heats, it ignites, or it causes the gas to glow. And I don't know, I'm not an expert in street lamps, but the important thing here is that it's not a simple process and that different street lamps work in different ways. Most of them nowadays are what we call high-density discharge, though there are also increasingly LED street lamps. And the question is, if they'd replaced your street lamp, would it have still reacted the same way? I don't know. So this is where the science starts. This is where Hilary Evans started. He said, okay, there's lots of different types of street lamps. Some people seem to affect them, some people don't. Let's collect them all and see what we've got in common. And he collected thousands of cases or thousands of people's experiences, and we've got a big database that he built through which we can run a computer to try and find out what causes street lamps to go on and off. And if that seems like a really bizarre way to spend your time, that's what we do. So, yeah. What we discovered very early on is because it's hard to generalize about how each street lamp works, the thing you normally get is you have one power supply, which affects three or four, maybe seven different lamps. This is the case in England, and it's the case in quite a lot of North America. So were there other street lamps around your one?
Yes, there were. There was a whole row of them. I don't remember exactly how many. Let's say a half dozen.
So let's say there's half a dozen. So there's probably somewhere nearby a pole or a power unit where the electricity goes and from which it's distributed to the lamps in parallel. So each lamp is on its own circuit, but each has the same power source. So you weren't making it flicker by affecting the power source, because they would all have then flickered, perhaps sequentially, but they would certainly have probably been affected. So therefore, to make the lamp go out or flicker, you have to have been doing something to either the incandescent metal that's glowing, the filament, or the sensor which turns it on and off. And most street lamps have a sensor on the top of them that detects light. Well, there's three ways you can do it. I never thought I'd be talking at this time in the morning about street lamps.
hey, it's better than heavy lifting.
Yeah, well, I'm not an expert engineer. We'll have 500 callers now phoning up to say how wrong I am on street lamps. But my understanding is that you can have them on a timer circuit, or some small towns, there's somebody who actually turns the street lamps on and off at a certain time with a switch. Or, quite common, probably the most common nowadays, you have a sensor on the top, which is a photoelectric cell, and that will pick up the light. And the light will then, you know, when it becomes light enough in the environment, the street lamp turns off. So perhaps really bright lights for a while might turn it off. But people, there's a famous American parapsychologist called Lloyd Auerbach. Have you come across him? Lloyd, I can't say his name properly, probably.
Lord Auerbach. It sounds familiar, Lloyd, but no.
He's died in California. He's been a big name for 20 or 30 years, and probably more, 40 years. And back in the 80s, he expressed the opinion that all that's happening is that as you approach the street lamp, a car headlight comes around the corner, hits the sensor, yeah, and makes the street light flicker, and you think you're doing it. And that was how he explained the whole phenomenon. He said there's no need to go any further because that explains it. It's just car headlights, you know, reflecting on the sensor and turning the street lamp off. The only problem with this opinion is that in England we would say it's, we probably use the word bollocks. I'm not sure what you in America.
Yeah, something's very similar.
Yeah, It's not considered a particularly rude term here, but we would say this is nonsense. It makes no sense. Because not many cars are driving across the clouds, you know, pointing their headlights down. If your headlights are pointing up to the point where they're hitting the top of street lamps, then you need to adjust them quite seriously, because you're going to be not just dazzling other drivers, you're going to be dazzling pilots. And because the sensor tends to be on the very top of the street lamp, you'd have to be, you know, your car would have to be doing a manoeuvre from the Dukes of Hazzard flying through the air for it to So I think we can rule that one out. But,
well, the headlight explanation is right up there with the lighthouse to explain the Rendlesham Forest UFO incident.
Yeah, I mean, actually, my brother-in-law told me that he went down to Rendlesham that night in a fire engine. He was up at Felixstowe up the coast, and there was a report of an aircraft going down off the coast, and they did actually scramble a fire engine down. But anyway, Rendlesham's another subject. Let's talk about that another time. But
indeed.
At the time, they didn't believe that it was a lighthouse, so...
Let's talk for a minute about how electricity works in the human body, because, you know, there may be some clues there. Because, I mean, our cells are wonderful conductors, right? They're specialized to conduct electrical currents. They've got sodium, and they've got potassium, and they've got magnesium, and all of these, and they have a specific electrical charge. Could the answer be there somewhere, something to do with how our body produces electricity?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We're finely tuned electrical machines. We have a fantastic capacity to, you know, to use electricity in our body. However, I was trying to work out how much energy you would need to overcome, this is one of the first things I thought, is, you know, how much body can the human body produce? And how much energy would you need to suppress a light bulb? And the problem we've got is that it's not just electricity, because when you made that light go out, let's assume that it wasn't LED. This was, what, 20 years ago?
Yes, 20 years ago. Oh, closer to 30, maybe. 20 or 30,
okay.
Yeah.
So it might be an incandescent bulb, in which case you've got a vacuum and you've just got a glowing filament, like a house light. Or if it's a street light, it's more likely that there was some kind of gas in there, sodium, or some kind of metal that's been heated up. And what happens is when the filament heats up, then the gas glows. Now, it's quite hard to make glowing gas. I can't actually say glowing gas. Sorry, it's my stupid English accent. It's hard to make glowing gas flicker, isn't it?
Yes, particularly when, you know, I'm probably, what, 12, 15, 20 feet from the actual lamp. You know,
yeah.
I'm down on the ground.
Yeah, and my understanding of physics is that, you know, once you've got, so what you may have done in some ways caused the filament to go out temporarily, but how, when you're so far away from it, did you conduct the electricity? And also, imagine for a moment that you were trying to do it. Imagine that you're a superhero, you're a Marvel superhero, I don't know, Captain Street Lamp, and you're going to use your powers to make street lamps go out. Do you have to know how they work to make it happen? I mean, you know, would you have to target a particular part? Because most people don't have the slightest idea how street lamps work. I didn't
right.
have the slightest idea how street lamps worked until I started working for ASAP, and suddenly it became a pressing issue, something that they neglected to teach me in school. But, you know, most people don't know. So if it's happening, we're not consciously doing it. Captain Street Lamp's powers, he doesn't think about how he's going to put the street lamp out. It just happens.
Exactly.
It's really odd. It's really, really odd and hard for somebody as mechanically minded as I am, actually, to work out how it would work, because I just cannot see how you could make that street lamp flicker. If it went out completely, the filament's dead, and that makes more sense. But one important thing about street lamps is that the glowing discharge, every so often, the street lamp will start to overheat, at which point it will cut out and it will cycle down, and the glow will go down. And, you know, so older street lamps will cycle on and off, but what they won't do is do it at your will. So maybe,
right.
And this is what Richard Wiseman argued, it's just, you know, we walk under so many street lamps that it's guaranteed that sooner or later there's going to be one that goes out.
Sure, I can buy into that. But I come back to the example of this boy in Bristol the static electricity and the TV would flicker until he left the room. Now, I don't know how many volts it takes to create a picture on a cathode ray tube, but I'm guessing that the human body, I mean, the amount of electricity we can generate must be, what, in the millivolts, right?
Yeah, well, Yeah. I mean, we can generate vast voltages in static. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I mean, ampage voltage. But yeah, okay, carry on. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I think that you probably could generate, I mean, a Persian cat walking on a rug or rolling on a rug can generate quite large voltages, but quite low, luckily, amperages. But again, I'm not a physicist here, you know, you're going to need somebody who is, because my knowledge, what we need is somebody who actually understands and works with street lamps and can talk to us about what the real practical reasons might be. One of the things we did looking at the database is when we looked at cases like this, was we couldn't find commonalities. We couldn't find a particular distance. We couldn't find a particular method. We couldn't find a particular mood. But one good thing was that none of the electric people appeared to be unwell.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
They were all in robust health. Even Angelique Cottin, she was described as listless and slightly disinterested. She was, after all, a 14-year-old girl.
Right.
But she wasn't actually unhealthy in any way, and she went on to live a good, you know, happy life, apart from the fact that she was ridiculed by the Académie Française. But, you know, there's nothing... People who have this power to make streetlights go on and off are not sick. They don't seem to be unhappy or unwell. They might be unhappy on the day it happens. There's a great case of a guy who had split up with his girlfriend, and he was walking home, and his girlfriend got worried and chased after him, and as they walked, each of the street lamps went off, and they eventually reconciled because they were so scared by the street lights going out that they stopped seeing what was going on. So I think that's, you know, one example where something good came out of it, but in most cases it just seems pointless, doesn't it?
Indeed. But it can be, I mean, just let's talk about electric people in general, leaving the street lamps aside for a moment.
Lamps.
I mean, if you can't work in an environment where there are electronics because you are a high voltage person, I mean, that is problematic. Some people, they can't wear a watch because it's affected. Is there any connection, any research done on the people that have been struck by lightning? Did they tend to be electric people?
I don't believe that's the case. My grandfather was struck by lightning 3 times, which is pretty unlucky, really, in the grand scheme of things. But he never showed any peculiarities. Because I asked, did he have any powers before or after? And, you know, because I'd read too many superhero comics, perhaps, as a child. But no, everyone denied that was the case. They said he was just very, very unlucky and had a tendency to shelter under trees or churches when storms blew up. But what I was going to say is that nowadays, in the high-tech industries, there are some people who are unable to work in those environments because the circuit boards they're working on keep blowing and dying. And that's not even considered remotely mysterious. It's just, you know, people shrug and say, sorry, you're not for us. So, you know, it's not unknown for people to... In my case, printers blow up quite spectacularly in different ways. You know, they fail in unusual and ridiculous manners whenever I get stressed and have a report to produce or a talk to do, and I need to print it in the next 10 minutes or I have a legal document that must be in by a deadline. You can guarantee if I'm applying for a passport, my printer will die. So I nowadays just go to the library and their printer dies instead. But no, I'm joking. I don't really. But yeah, I go and ask a friend to help me once mine goes. So
now, is that Murphy's Law or are you an electric person?
I think it's probably Murphy's Law, but I only notice it because it happens so regularly. It must have happened. I mean, I've gone through 20 printers now. So perhaps we're all electric people. Don't you think that's possible? Perhaps because we don't understand the physics or the psychology of this, there has to be a certain combination of both consciousness, anticipation, and, you know, we actually all have the capacity. Some people don't realize they have the power, so they're busy putting out street lamps when they could be. Perhaps we all have the potential to be, you know, superheroes.
Yes, possibly. But, I mean, some of the examples that we've been talking about, you know, absolutely remarkable. This boy who could hold a light bulb and it would illuminate. Of course, the case of Angelique Cottin, who we mentioned earlier, that may have been a hoax, hard to say. But then there's this case of this, they called her the Luminous Woman of Pirano, which is a tiny town in Slovenia on the Adriatic Sea.
Yep.
And she was an asthma patient. And over a period of several weeks, whenever she slept, a blue glow would be emitted from her breasts. I mean, this is bioluminescence. And, you know, they sat around her, a team of investigators, and they watched it. They even filmed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's a real physical phenomenon that nobody has to this day explained. I mean, if we go back 130, 140 years, we had the electric girls of Smyrna in Turkey. And I don't think many people have heard of those, but if you just Google electric girls of Smyrna, you'll find the story. You've got so many different cases. And in the wake of Angelique Cottin, many of them came to the attention of scientists, and many of them were very, very scrupulously investigated and recorded at the time. And to this day, there are scientists all over the world who are sitting around looking at weird edge cases like this, but they're not publishing them because, you know, journal editors aren't interested, their reputations will be damaged, and because at the end of the day, you know, you don't really make a reputation unless you've got some way of explaining your funny phenomena. So, yeah, but the internet means we know more about these cases than we used to.
I think it's time, you know, that I mean, there are not a lot of books that have been written about this. Right, as far as I can tell. I mean, I searched high and low, and was it Hillary Evans?
Hillary Evans. Did you read it?
I did read that once upon a time, since Hillary has passed on, has anyone picked up the mantle?
No, and we need more research, and we need somebody who actually, unlike us, knows how to, I mean, to start with, you need to have to know how to run proper electrical equipment, how to do tests, how to benchmark them, how to get them set up, and you need to do it on your own, and you need to not be dependent on funding from anyone else. That's what really matters. And if anyone was interested in doing some simple experiments, then we would provide, and I'm sure the SBR would provide very small, and I mean, we are talking very small because we don't have much money at the moment, research grants.
CJ, hold on. We'll take a time out. We'll come back, and towards the bottom of the hour, we will take phone calls, questions, comments, and hopefully hear from some electric people. The Black Keys, Low High, taking us into the break here on Coast to Coast AM.